Okay, good morning, everybody. We're continuing part two of managing your mitzvos, the Pesach Seder. We're piling it in today. Murphy's Law, you may have to give that extra copy back, and Jeff can make an extra one afterwards. I was not expecting such a big crowd today, but Baruch Hashem. So last week we did part one of the Seder, going through the halachas of the Seder. So if anybody would like a copy of that, we have a few extras. And then if you want more, you can go right to our website. I'm sorry, I don't have any more. You can go right to our website, right on online classes, click on classes, and managing your mitzvos number 16 is part one, and today is part two. So you'll have all that down, and it's easy to catch up things that you miss. So we're continuing where we left off. We are on Rochtzo. We've gone through the Magid. We've gone through the bulk of the Seder in terms of relating the story. And now we go through many of the mitzvahs that happen. So today's class should be a little shorter than last week's one, quite long. Hopefully this one will go a little bit shorter. And if you're following along in the Haggadah here, we're on page 26. Just so we're all like on the same page, so to speak. We're about to do many of the functional mitzvahs of the Seder. And we move on to Rochtzo, which is washing the hands. Now, we wash our hands this time in the normal way, the way you normally wash freeing bread on a Shabbos and during the week. The matzis is the same thing. You wash the right hand two times, the left hand two times. You make the blessing al netilas yadayim. And we have there's a little bit of a problem here. The problem being, there's a number of steps that we're going to be doing in succession, and we're not allowed to talk during these steps. And therefore, there's people who may not know what to do. So therefore, the leader of the Seder has to give a nice explanation before he washes his hand, so everybody understands what's coming up, and because he won't be able to explain to them. It's very important when we're doing the mitzvahs, such as eating the matz, eating the mor, and all these things, people don't understand. It's not the time to, like, talk and schmooze while you're eating the matzah. You know, pretend like you're shaking a lulav on Sukkos. So while you're shaking it, you start schmoozing with somebody. So how you doing? How's everything doing? No, you're doing a mitzvah. You're doing a mitzvah. You got to be focused on doing a mitzvah. A lot of people don't understand this point, that when we get to this stage now where we wash our hands, we're going to do motzi, matzah, moror, korech. That's going to take about 10 minutes to do it properly, and people aren't supposed to be schmoozing then. It's totally, people aren't in tune with that. They've heard, well, meaningless. Like, I eat the meal, I talk when I'm eating a meal. So, and I'm doing this mitzvah of eating food, I could talk. And it's not so. So one has to be careful to be able to go through these steps quickly without wasting time. So therefore, the master of ceremonies who's leading the Seder has to explain what's going to be happening through after Korech. And the only thing you can talk about in between is explain how to do the mitzvahs. So you tell them, okay, we're going to wash our hands, then it's going to come motzi matz, and you explain what motzi matz is, and we'll get to it as we do it. We're going to do morah, we're going to do korech. So you explain all that before you wash your hands, so people know what's coming down the pike. That's number one. Usually, I didn't mention it last time, but there's a custom when you start every step, you say it out loud. Like you say the word Kaddish. You say Kaddish and then you make Kiddish. You know, Urchatz, then you wash your hands. Karpas, you say everything. So here again, once you've washed your hands, you can't talk. So you say Kaddish, you say Rochtza, you go Rochtza, then Motzi Matza. You gotta say all three of them because you can't talk until you finish the matzah. You gotta say those three things. Now, we will see that when we're going to eat the matzah, but motzi matzah, you have to eat 30 grams of matzah. 30 grams of matzah, which is approximately one entire machine matzah. And a shmur matzah, depending on the size of the shmur matzah, which we said last week, and we put that down. an average hand matzah is somewhere between 50 and 80 grams. And it's easy to calculate. When you buy a matzah by the pound, see how many matzahs you get, and divide by that, and you'll have an idea. I have to go back to my metric measurements. Forget how many grams are in a pound. If anybody knows, they could help me out here. But there's a way to figure out what it is. So anyway, so everyone's going to have 30 grams when you're eating motzi matzah. Well, that ain't going to be in the matzah that the head of the Seder has. If there's a few people at the Seder, it ain't going to be. So again, to save time, so before you wash your hands, give everybody a piece of matzah that's close, that's just under 30 grams. Let's say 25 grams. Give everybody a piece of matzah there from the side box, whatever, shmura matzah. Everybody's got it there. And you'll see later on, it's going to be very helpful. But this is all being prepared in advance. Because when it's time, you make that bracha of the motzi, you're the leader. You don't have time to start passing around matzahs and making sure everybody's got 30 grams of matzahs. Because you're going to see you've got a time limit. So you got to have everything prepared well enough in advance so that when you're the leader, you make the bracha, boom, you go straight to eating and you finish the matzah in a certain amount of time. That's why it's important to be prepared in advance. As you'll see, as we do motzi matzah, you'll understand exactly why that's happening. And just like by Urchatz, the custom is that the leader of the Seder should not have to get out of his seat, and his children or someone brings him water and wash his hands for him at his seat to show a sign of royalty. It's not a bad idea to do it for the parents. Children should do it for the parents. That's kibud av ei, would be a good thing too. And we do that for the Seder. So that is rochza, which leads us right into motzi matzah. Motzi matzah, this is one of the biblical mitzvahs of the night. Some are rabbinic and some are biblical. Eating matzah on the Seder night is a biblical mitzvah. The Torah says you have to eat matzah. And therefore we eat, but since there's a difference of opinion as to what is the proper measurement of a kazayas, an halachic egg's worth of matzah, we got the stringent opinion. There's room to sit here. You know, Sean, can you do me a favor? Ask Jeff if he can make another copy. I think we need one more copy. Everybody has two copies. And we have to take the stringent opinion, and we go to 30 grams of matzah. Now, please remember, the matzah eaten for all the matzahs of the Seder night. The original I marked up. So I'm sorry. The matzahs must be shmura. They must be matzahs that were watched from the time that the wheat was cut down, because the Torah says, "Ushmartam esam mitzvahs." You should shmartam esam mitzvahs, shmartam esam matzahs. You should watch the matzahs. The matzahs have to be watched. That no chametz was from the earliest times. That's not your standard box of matzah that you buy. Please remember, there's kosher for Pesach matzah, and there's shmura matzah. You can tell the difference because one costs a lot more than the other.
And if one doesn't have
not necessarily
not
taste
better, shmura matzah, can you use the
one? If one does not have shmura matzah, then one has big problems. Wow. It's not hard to get shmura matzah. You go right into Sobeys now.
See.
There's tons of boxes now. You have to have shmur matzahs. If you don't have shmur matzah, you've not done the mitzvah. I mean, you're missing in the mitzvah.
Does it have to be handmade stuff?
It doesn't have to be handmade shmur matzah. It has to be a shmur matzah. Remember, the shmura, everyone thinks, you know, round matzahs are shmur matzahs. It happens to be all round matzahs are shmur matzahs, but that's not what defines them as shmura. Shmura means that the grain, when the wheat was cut, it's been watched since then. You've been watching it. You're making sure no water touched it, nothing. And then what you do with that wheat is your business. You're going to grind it. It's going to be flour, no matter what. So you have shmura flour now. Now you're going to decide, you're going to make this in a machine or you're going to make it by hand. Either way, it was shmura. It was watched. Right? So technically, you know, anyone who makes hand matzah, they never make non-shmura because it's too expensive as it is. It's not going to be, of course you're going to make it shmura. But there's machines, so there's no difference in terms of eating matzah that shmura, a machine or a hand doesn't make a difference in terms of that aspect. And the machine is much cheaper. There's different kinds. You have to be careful that you make sure they don't sell you last year's shmura matzah. be very careful. You, when you open it up, you can smell. It smells terrible. You know, remember, it's business is business. Right? So you gotta be careful. So, you know, when you buy the matzah, you know, open it up after you buy it. Just give one little smell. If it smells like paint, you give it back. He said, you sold me last year's stuff. I want my money back.
But is it still kosher?
It's kosher. It's kosher, but you won't like to eat it. Yeah. And it's not unusual. You know, you gotta realize there are caveat emptor. There are people there to make lots of money on Pesach, and they couldn't care less about you. Not saying everybody, but there are unscrupulous people, and you don't want to find out at the Seder night that you were sold a box of old matzahs. You know, they'll take the matzahs and put it in a new box. You know, because remember, every box of matzah retails, you know, even the cheapest retail box of shmurus is $6-$7. If it's not shmur matzah, okay, they sell during the year. People eat matzah during the year too, but no one's going to spend $6 on matzah during the year. So you can just take the box, matzahs out of the box, put another box. That's all. That's not unusual. Put a different sticker on it, please. So you have to be careful, but it's got to be shmur matzah at least for the seders. And what we mean is for the mitzvahs, that you, the three times you're eating matzah for the mitzvah, it has to be shmur. It's not called a beautification of the mitzvah. It's the primary fulfillment of the mitzvah. Again, it's very easy. You go to Sobeys, there's three or four different varieties of shmur matzah. Anyone is acceptable as long as it says the word. It says it in English, S-H-M-U-R-A, shmur matzahs.
And then, just for the seders, and chalamed you can eat
chalamed, even on the seder, if you want to eat any other matzah during the meal, it doesn't have to be shmur matzah. But the three times you're going to eat the matzah for the mitzvah of eating matzah, the first two nights of Pesach, has to be shmur matzah. So now, as we said last week though, if you're the leader of the seder, it's preferable to have hand matzahs, because since you're breaking matzahs up, you have to have enough size. And technically, a hand matzah for the head of the Seder doesn't work out logistically, although it's still halachically kosher, the matzah. So a good rule of thumb is that the leader should have hand matzahs, and there's many, many other matzahs, hand or machine, that are available to be eaten by the others who have to have the right amount to eat. All right, I hope that's clear. So now, you can get the hand matzahs at Sobeys too. Sure, they got lots of ham matzahs. You can get ham matzahs from the bookstores, sell them. You can get ham matzahs from Rabbi Eisen. And there's other local distributors, you know, private people who sell shmura matzah. Those who need spelt matzahs, you can even buy spelt shmura matzahs. So there's this, and there's other kinds, there's all kinds, non-gluten, I don't know what, you have all kinds of matzahs now, but that not all at Sobeys, but, if you, this, Rabbi Magid, Herschel Magid, he's in the, Bubble of Directory, he has all kinds of these unique kind of matzahs. I usually have to order them. So, as long as it's made from one of the five grains, then you could have, it could be a brand matzah, because it's still made from the five grains, an oat matzah. As long as it's from the five grains, that's fine. It's not a problem. Good. So you gotta use the shmura matzah. The leader of the Seder should have everybody in mind when he's making the blessing, and that they're fulfilling the mitzvah of eating matzah on the Seder night. And everybody has in mind to discharge their obligation by listening to him. And you have in mind that your blessing is gonna be for the next two times you're gonna eat matzah, for Koirech and Afikoman later on in the day. When we're eating the matzah, we should be reclining when we eat. The men, again, remember we said the men are obliged to recline. It's a very important time to eat the matzah and to recline at that time. When you make the bracha, the matzah should be covered when you make the motzi. And now we come to the tricky part for the master of ceremonies. When you're making the bracha, you should be holding all three matzahs. When you make the first bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Hamotzi Lechem in Eretz, you're holding all three matzahs. When you finish that bracha, you deftly release the bottom matzah, and then make the second bracha of Al Achilas Matzah. First bracha was Hamotzi Lechem in Eretz. I don't know if I said that the first time, did I? First bracha is Hamotzi Lechem in Eretz. The second one is Al Achilas Matzah. Now, why are we doing it in such a strange way? And why do, and the better question, why do we need three matzahs? We always have two matzahs a whole year long. The answer is because we've broken the middle matzah. And we've already learned in the laws of Shabbos that when you're making a motzi on yanta for Shabbos, you have to have lechem mishnah, a double portion of bread, and that bread has to be shleimim, has to be complete. So you always have to have two complete matzahs at every Yom Tov meal. And the Seder is no different. It's a Yom Tov meal too. Besides you eating matzah for the sake of the mitzvah of eating matzah, it's a Yom Tov meal that you're obliged to have, you know, bread. I mean, not bread, but something that's a staple. So, therefore, you have to have two full matzahs. But on the other hand, matzah is called lechem oni, the bread of a poor man. And the bread of a poor man, a man breaks up his matzah, doesn't eat his whole matzah, has a broken matzah. So we have to have a broken matzah because that's essentially what matzah is. There's no such thing as a person eating a whole matzah to remember what matzah is. So you gotta break the matzah, but I got a broken matzah, but I need to have two whole ones, that's why I have to have three. You see? So when I make the first bracha of Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, and that's because it's Yom Tov, and I'm obliged to have two whole loaves of matzah, so I've got to be holding on to all three matzahs. But when I'm now making the bracha of Alachilas Matzah for the eating of the mitzvah of matzah, so then I release the bottom matzah because I don't need that anymore. I don't need to have two complete matzahs. I've already made my bracha of the motzi. But now for the eating of matzah, I need to have that broken matzah. So I make a bracha on, the second bracha goes on those two matzahs.
And that's the leader making the bracha.
The leader. Other people don't have to do any of this. Just the leader has to do this. So keep your eyes on the leader.
There's two blessings for the matzah?
Yeah, it's right there in the page 27. It gives you right there. It has both brachas there. The motzi, like you normally make, and the special mitzvah of al achilas matzah. And we're not, there's a big argument, I'm telling you simply, there's a big argument, you know, which bracha goes on which matzah. And therefore, when you're about to eat the matzah, what you should do is break both matzahs simultaneously, and the leader should take 15 grams, you have to have 30 grams, you should have 15 grams from the top matzah, I mean, we're not going to measure 100% if it's 17 grams, you know, but half should be from the top matzah, and half should be from the middle matzah, that from both matzahs, the one he makes the bracha of amotzi, because he didn't make a motzi on the broken matzah. He made a brachah on the full matzah. He made the alachilas matzah on the broken matzah. So he made a brachah on two matzahs. So you eat a little bit from both. You eat 15 grams of both matzahs for the leader, and that's how he fulfills the mitzvah of eating the matzah on Pesach. And we're doing both mitzvahs simultaneously.
The middle one's already broken.
The middle one's already been broken. Yes, we learned that last week. Correct.
The bottom one hasn't.
Bottom one's being set aside for korech. That's later, for later use. Okay?
So we have to give it.
Oh, and now we're coming to that. Now, so remember, everybody was given 25 grams beforehand. Saves a lot of time now, especially with a seder of 10, 15, 20 people. So they've got that there. And now everyone should be given a small piece from the top matzah to share with everybody. So they have part of the matzah he made the bracha on, and combining with the 25 grams, hopefully they reached 30 grams. And they should eat both of their pieces together as well. Now again, it depends on the size of the matzah. Now, you're asking why didn't we give from the middle matzah? Because there's much left from the middle matzah. Remember, he broke the middle matzah. A smaller matzah is 50 grams. So he's already broken in half. And the bigger half, he's put away. So how many grams does this broken matzah have already? 30 grams, whatever. And he's got to eat half of that. So there's not much to share. But the top one, you know, he's only taking 15 grams, there's about 30, 50, 60 grams left, so he can give 5 grams of each piece from the top to give everybody a piece from what he had. And that way everybody is eating from at least one of the matzahs that he made the bracha in. Because that clear is a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
And some of you have to know how to guide your husbands in this, to make sure they're doing it properly. Okay? So clear. So you make the bracha, the first bracha of amotzi on all three matzahs, drop the bottom matzah, make the bracha of alachilas matzah, the two matzahs, he breaks the matzah and begins to eat with that matzah, 15 grams of each, And then the top matzah is distributed a little piece for everybody else who already has 25 grams. Everyone's eating 30 grams of matzah, the equivalent to basically one machine matzah. That, and you are fulfilling the mitzvah properly. If you just have a token bite, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. You've got to eat a whole, it's really a nice sized piece of matzah. Okay? Now, although a whole year long we dip matzah or bread into salt, tonight the custom is not to dip it into the salt, because we want to show how precious the mitzvah is. We show how precious the mitzvah is by giving no additives. Nothing to enhance the taste. The pure taste of matzah. We don't want to taste any salt when we're eating this, to show how much we love this mitzvah. Now, the reason why there's no time to schmooze is because there's another point. Just like you have to eat a certain amount of matzah for that to be considered eating, a nibble isn't considered eating. You're supposed to remember the lessons that matzah is teaching us. You know, we used to be poor people and what it tasted like to eat matzah. We're in a rush to go out of Egypt. All the message, so you gotta eat a substantial piece to integrate the message of matzah. But you gotta do something else. It's not just how much you eat, you have to eat it in a certain amount of time. Because that's considered an eating session. If I take a piece of matzah, it takes me a half an hour to eat it. I'm not really feeling the sensation of eating matzah. I'm nibbling. So there's an expression that's called kidei achilas pras, which is halachic terminology. But it says it has to be eaten in the time that it normally can be eaten if you're not doing anything else but eating. So the most strict opinion is to do that in 2 minutes. To eat a whole matzah in 2 minutes. If that's difficult, we'll give you 4 minutes. Now you have a break on this. The time is measured from when the first amount of matzah is swallowed. So that's a big help. Mm-hmm. So what can you do? You can bite a few pieces and bite a little more and chew and chew and chew and chew and chew. The clock hasn't started yet. You could chew maybe even half the matzah. And then once you begin the first swallow, now the clock runs. Now, so we're saying you should probably get it done in 2 minutes. But if you have to take 4 minutes, that's also fine. And there's a more lenient opinion says 9 minutes. But 4 minutes is really a good time to do it. The truth of the matter is it can be done. And it's not hard. You don't have to, you know, I wrote over there, you know, you don't have to have an eating frenzy. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. But you only have to do one thing. Don't schmooze. Just focus on the mitzvah. And think about it. You're supposed to be thinking about the mitzvah. So the leader of the Seder may want to tell people beforehand, listen, we're going to now be thinking about the matzah. We're going to be meditating on our matzah while we're eating it. So we're not going to have any discussion now. We'll have discussion later. We're thinking about matzah. We're thinking about the Jews who ate matzah slaved. We're thinking about how when we were redeemed, all we had was matzah because the redemption was so quick. So a lot of things to think about matzah. And everyone will prepare their own Dvar Torahs. And says, think about this while we're eating the matzah. It's not the time to schmooze. This is the mitzvah time. It's one of the rare times where your actual physical eating is the fulfillment of a biblical commandment. You think, doing mitzvahs, I have to daven all day, give tzedakah and this, which is true. But here's a case where your lowest level functioning, your animalistic functioning, is producing a mitzvah. So obviously, if you're going to start schmoozing and saying, you know, how's the hockey tournament going, and how's cousin Sadie doing, face, and all these things, which are all wonderful things, and you should talk about it, you know, at other times, and they're to be encouraged, but not when you're doing a mitzvah. So if you're just chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing, you'll get it done in the prescribed time. It's not going to be a problem. And as well, the rabbis say, if you're really getting a dry mouth, you could have some water to help you get it down, because, you know, we're not angels. And if you have a dry mouth, it's going to be a very terrible process. So you could definitely drink a little bit of water. Only water. Shouldn't be drinking wine or other juices or things. Just water, because you want the total taste of the wine. But you must recline. If you don't recline, on this one in particular, the men would have to eat another 30 grams of matzah while reclining. So it's definitely not worth it, because you're going to be eating so much matzah as it is.
You have to have a pillow to recline?
So we discussed that last week, that reclining can be done in many ways. It's easier with a pillow. It's easier with an armchair and a pillow, and you recline like this to the left side. That's very easy. If you don't have a pillow, you could recline on the table like this. But it should be in a reclined fashion while you're eating that matzah. Should be done reclined. And that is the way to fulfill the mitzvah of eating the matzah. Many, many people don't do this mitzvah properly at all.
Sure.
Right? So that's why you spent the time before you washed your hands. Remember I said, before we wash, because we can't talk afterwards, and we're busy. See how busy we are doing this mitzvah? So you guys, we got to explain what's going to be happening. And you say, you know, if you have a secular guest, say, I don't want you to think I'm being impolite. You know, it says, we're going to have a spiritual experience now.
That's a
good one. Kind of a spiritual, we're going to bond with the matzah. He'll come up with some esoteric meanings of the word matzah, what matzah means, and how matzah is all the same letters as chametz, except one is a hey and one is a ches. It only takes a second to turn something beautiful into something terrible, and that's why swiftness is important. Matzah is from a person who does things quickly. Chametz, someone who does things slowly. You know, if you don't love someone, you don't love something, you're going to be lackadaisical about it. But if you love someone, you hurry. And tonight's the night that Hashem loves us so much. He's showering us with love, and He's given us the opportunity to connect to Him by doing a mitzvah that's not so hard. You could just eating food, and you're feeling God's kindness as the nutrients are going into your body and replenishing the carbohydrates. Or Achveis, if you knew more about the human anatomy, you could describe it even better than I could. And how the blood is being enriched, and you're invigorated, and you're feeling life coming into your blood, and you're so happy that Hashem, it's like Hashem giving you a big hug, and we want to meditate on that while we're doing this. So it's our time to really bond with God now. So please pardon me that after washing we do it, we're going to just not going to say anything for the next 4 minutes. We're just going to enjoy. And then afterwards, you could describe what you've been feeling, and we'll talk about it. Okay? That's a technique that, you know, depending on the type of people you have, if they're not so skeptical, you know, if they're half a mensch, then they'll be receptive. But you've got to position it. You've got to show them what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. And then they'll receive it. As opposed to you just go, Moshe, so what's new? You know, it's not going to work. So, because you want to stay focused. So if everybody understands that, then usually things work out okay.
Why does the woman not do incline?
Okay, we talked that last week. It's issues of modesty. It's issues of modesty. Okay, so that's the matzah. Okay, moving on, next page. Moror. The rabbis tell us there's 5 different species of moror. Today we're not sure what all those species are. But the preferred species is a leafy lettuce that has been identified as romaine lettuce. That is the optimal species to be used for moror. Now, I know some of you are going to ask, what do you mean? Moror is supposed to be bitter. Romaine lettuce tastes pretty good. Mm-hmm. The answer is because we harvest the romaine lettuce before it is allowed to get bitter. If you keep romaine lettuce in the ground long enough, that sweet romaine lettuce turns very, very bitter. But the producers, the farmers, they know you don't wait too long. Just when they're ready to go, you harvest them. You don't keep them longer. And that's exactly what the slavery was in Egypt. In the beginning, when the Jews were in Egypt, it was good. It tasted good. They lived in Egypt. They made money. They assimilated, things were wonderful. Then power lowered the boom on, and then it became bitter. So that's what the romaine lettuce signifies. That bitterness, it's much more bitter. For Jews who lived in Germany, Lahavdol, the Holocaust was much more bitter than for Jews who lived in Poland. Why? Because Jews who lived in Poland, they knew always the non-Jews hated them. So it wasn't a surprise for them when they killed them. But in Germany, the Germans gave them all the rights they could want. It was very sweet and beautiful in Germany. And all Jews, you know, many Jews assimilated, and the Germans were their best friends. It was sweet. And when that's taken away from you, and you're treated like a piece of dirt, the bitterness is much worse. The German Jews suffered much more than Polish Jews. I'm not saying in terms of death, but I'm saying in disappointment and bitterness. the Jew who lived in Egypt, they were living with prosperity. They were the ones that enriched Egypt to begin with. And then the Egyptians turn on them like that. That was made it bitter. That's the bitter. You know, don't you feel bitter if you work for a company for 10, 15 years and then they just take all your good ideas and fire you and then hire somebody else for half the price? You know, if you weren't a good worker and it was a lousy place all along, Numela. But you know, you were up there. You were an executive vice president. You know, you were doing well and you did so many ideas to make the company wonderful. And then they keep your ideas but fire you because they got a cheaper guy. It's bitter. So that's the idea when you're eating the moror. Is eat something like that. Now, if you don't have romaine lettuce, you can use iceberg lettuce. Now, this year we used to have romaine. Now, remember, there's a big problem with insect infestation in lettuce. A big problem. The Torah says if you eat a live insect, and an insect can be the size of a period on this page. Not a bold period, a regular period. You can see, everyone can see that dot, can't you? Well, any insect that you can see, and you could see these, if you had proper training, your problem is the leaves are green. A green leaf, and a little black dot, and a green leaf, you have to look really hard to find it, but it's there. Every insect, there's little thrips. Any insect you eat, you transgress 5 negative commandments. That's each insect carries its own negative commandment. You could have in a head of lettuce 30 to 50 insects. So you're trying to do one mitzvah of eating more on the night of Pesach, which nowadays, because we don't have a temple, is only rabbinic. When we had a temple, it was a biblical mitzvah. But now it's rabbinic. To fulfill one rabbinic mitzvah, you could do 30 biblical averos. It's not worth the trade-off.
Why is that?
Why?
Yeah.
We're not going to get into the reasons of mitzvahs now. You know, insects are called an abomination. We don't eat. It's a law of kashrus. It's a law of kashrus. Just like you don't eat pig, you don't eat insects. You don't eat shrutzim. Things that crawl on the ground. You know, we don't associate with those types of beings. We don't ingest them. So that we're not allowed to, the Torah says. So you got to have to be very careful to inspect the vegetables. You got to inspect them. So we were lucky until the Israeli government decided to throw out the Jews from Gush Katif. Yeah. We're so fortunate. There was beautiful hydroponically grown vegetables, or not only hydroponically, but in specially areas that were screened that bugs couldn't get in. And every year we always would expect these beautiful romaine leaves from Gush Katif. And they were inspected and everything was fine. So now we don't have that. So that's one thing to thank the government for. And now many agencies, even that they wash vegetables, it's not so simple. And the COR has been very clear that on most of these pre-washed vegetables, even with a kosher sign, they still have checked and they found insects in them. The only ones that they allow you to use without any checking is the iceberg lettuce. So if you want to use for morer, use the iceberg lettuce with a proper certification. Those are the ones you don't have to wash. Okay, those you can assume have been checked. And don't wait till Erev Pesach, because they'll be sold out by then. Can't buy it too early, can't buy it today, it'll spoil in 2 weeks. But you have to figure, you know, how long a bag can last. You know, probably the end of next week already would be the right time. And you buy a lot of bags, because people are going to eat it. So, and be careful when you buy those bags. They have mixtures with iceberg and romaine. That's also no good. It's got to be just iceberg lettuce. So be careful what you're buying. We don't want you to do averus at the Seder.
If it has iceberg and romaine, then it has a COR.
It's not going to have a COR. You shouldn't buy it.
What hexers would...
The only ones you're going to buy are the icebergs. Pure iceberg, no mixtures.
With
a hexer.
With
a hexer on it. It's got to be with that. The only other brand is Bodek. But Bodek generally only does frozen, so it's not going to help us over here. But so that is... Or you could take romaine lettuce, but inspect it. And we had a class... a couple of weeks ago, the rabbis in the COR gave a talk on Motzei Shabbos about inspection. That is all on our website. If you didn't catch it, it's all on our website with the handouts and the audio class for those who missed it. So it's there, and you can inspect it. And you can buy a light box from the COR and put it, the leaf under the light box, and you could see if there's bugs. It's time-consuming, but that might be an alternative. There's another thing you can do. You know, leaves are hard to see, but you can take romaine lettuce, has very nice stalks. So you can cut away the leaves, and just use stalks. Stalks are a lot easier to check because it's clean and light green. Wash them thoroughly, scrape them off, and then, you know, they're fine. So it's not a class on inspecting for insects, but we do want to do it right on Pesach night. And therefore, you got to be very careful. And I remember years ago, before you had Gush Katif, I remember that was my job. My job, I spent the whole morning, is to clean all the romaine lettuce. That was my job, you know, 3 hours to get it done, to make sure there's enough romaine lettuce stalks and everything. Took it up to the light and washed them out, did the whole thing. You know, Baruch Hashem, you had Gush Katif came along, and now we don't have that. So we're back to that. So those are the parameters. Now, on the other hand, there's another, the next level of moror is grated horseradish. And that, you don't have too many problems with bugs. You're scraping off the outside anyway, and then that's for sure. But it's got to be grated horseradish. Can't be whole. You're not allowed to eat a piece of horseradish. It's a danger to your life. You eat grated horseradish. So either one may be acceptable, but it must be you grated the horseradish and not commercially produced horseradish. In vinegar? In vinegar especially. For sure not. That's for sure not kosher horseradish. Absolutely not. Another mistake people make. What you can get now from Pearls, and be very careful when you look at the label, Pearls personally grates horseradish, and they make two kinds, with or without vinegar. Mm-hmm. So they'll grate the horseradish, and they'll vacuum seal it so it doesn't turn brown, and that's 100%, and it'll write on it, kosher for the Seder. That is optimal to use. Optimal to use that, because that's really mamish horseradish, with no preservatives, nothing, and you can get a big bottle of that. That's definitely a good way to go. Now,
how long will it last?
Well, it'll last for weeks.
Oh, well.
Oh yeah, it's vacuum sealed. It's in the refrigerator. I don't know how long it'll last. It'll last. You only need it for
no,
two nights.
No, you want to buy in advance.
Yeah. Well, as soon as they put it out.
How much of the horseradish would you eat?
We're going to talk about that. But that's clear. That's the kind of more you have to use. So, and basically, those only kind. There's others, but it's questionable. Endive, it's got to be the real endive, not the fake endive. There's different things we call endive but aren't endive. So it's better to stay with these two kinds. Now, how much do you have to eat? So if you're eating lettuce leaves, you have to eat an area that basically covers an area of 8 by 10. Basically, it's a sheet of paper. Here I have this was a photocopy long ago with different measurements. Basically, it's a sheet of paper is an 8 by 10. And that's if you're taking leaves. If you're taking stalks, which is much more condensed area, then it's only an area of 3 by 5, which is a smaller area, and it's a lot easier to eat that. So that's and that is one. Grated horseradish, you'd have to eat 27 cc's, which is a little bit over an ounce. And if that's hard, 17 cc's, which is one heaping tablespoon. That'd be the least amount. You could have one or the other, or a combination of both, and some people do combine both. Why? Not everybody can eat a lot of more like that. And it's strong, powerful more. You know, you can't take the more, for example, and grate it and leave it open for 3 hours and let it get diluted. That's not good more either. The ones you get from Pearls, they're so vacuum packed, man, you take it, again, everyone has different tolerance levels, but for me, it's plenty hot. Plenty hot. And to take an ounce of horseradish, you know, that's hard for some people. If we face you're Mexican or things like that, you're used to hot foods, you think it's nothing. But, average, so what we do is, most people take the lettuce, and what they'll do is they'll sprinkle in a little horseradish. Just to have that taste. I remember my mother, Aleha Shalom, she would tell over when she was a little child in Poland, her father made everybody take horseradish. And she couldn't have been, how old was she when the war broke out? She was 14. So she remembers when she was a little kid that the father would make her take that horseradish and she would cry and she was and she's saying this, Medarv zu denken ständig wie bitter das hat gewesen in Mitzrayim. You have to always remember how bitter it was in Egypt. Now the point is, you really should cry a little bit because we have to remember it was terrible. Remember the whole mitzvah is to relive the Exodus of Egypt. How can you relive it if you don't feel how bitter it was? So, okay, everyone has different tolerance levels. So that's why what I usually do with the Seder is I usually give everybody leaves, unless they want horseradish, and I put in a little, even for the little kids. Let them have the horseradish. So they don't like it. Too bad. They got to learn from a young age what it meant to be in Egypt.
At what age would you do it?
Whatever. 4 or 5 years old. 5, 6 years old, they should do it.
Not like 2.
Nah, no, 2-year-old doesn't understand anything. But not anything about Egypt. So you can't combine them. Now, the more, again, should be eaten as quickly as possible, and it shouldn't take more than 2 minutes. Same rules as before, and if not 4 minutes, and it also begins from the time of swallowing. But before we're going to make the bracha, before we eat the more, we're going to dip the more into charoses, which is a mixture of finely chopped fruit, spices, and red wine. The fruits are generally sour apples and nuts, and the spices are cinnamon and ginger. They all have symbolic connotations. And really, if you want to make more really right, it should be initially thick, pasty, and stringy. Like stringy. Like you make the apples as ways to what do you call it?
Shred.
You shred the apples in a way to make it stringy, because then it looks like straw that was used to make the bricks. If you can, this is not like a, you know, it's not Torah Messina. If you can't do it, don't make yourself crazy and spend hours on it. But if you can shred it in a way that's straw-like looking, like long, thin pieces, that's better. And the sour apples and the spices remind how bitter the slavery was. And it's meant to look like, what do you call it, mortar. And now you're dipping the mortar into the mortar. Obviously, the symbolism is unbelievable there. And it's also mixed with wine to remember the blood. So it's time to dip the morer into the charoses. But right before you're going to do that, it's good idea, put a little bit more wine so the charoses is liquidy enough that you're actually dipping. It's got to be a dip. Right? A lot of people make it very thick and really, it's too thick. You can't dip. You just put it in and nothing's, it's not a dip. And a lot of people make a mistake. They think, you know, let's say this is a little stick of more, right? That's a little piece of more. So you're going to take them, and here's this is your charoises, let's say, yeah? It's going to say, oh man, I don't want to taste this more. So they dip way in, they put out a half a pound of charoises, you know? And there's a little more in the charoises. No. You're only supposed to dip it in. The idea is it's supposed to take a little edge off the bite of the more. So you just, a dip, normally when you dip, most of the dip stays in the dip. Only a little bit comes out, and even then you should shake the more a little bit. Only a little bit of charoses is there. People make a mistake. They just pile on the charoses and the mitzvah, the charoses. You know, when you have dips, you know, the main thing is the carrot. You know, it's a little dip. A dip is supposed to, you know, do a little something, but not overwhelm the taste. Same thing the charoses. It's just a little dip, and most of the charoses fall off, and just a little bit of charoses on the more. Now, you're ready to go? You make the bracha al achilas moror. You don't have to make a bray priya dami because you made it earlier on the karpas, earlier in the Seder. And one should have in mind, and the custom is everybody makes their own bracha for this. Everyone makes their own bracha. You should have in mind they're fulfilling the mitzvah of eating moror, and that this blessing should go on the korech. And we obviously do not recline when we eat the moror, because the moror is a symbolism of slavery, and reclining would be a contradiction to that. Okay, so we've done the matzah and the mor. Yes.
Okay, so if you're having horseradish and romaine lettuce,
so you can combine. So let's say you could have a half of that. Let's say 8 by 5 of lettuce and a half an ounce of horseradish.
Okay, thank you.
You can combine as long as they come out together to that amount. Yeah.
Okay, and if you're going with like the bagged iceberg lettuce or something like that, and you've got horseradish mixed in with that. So it's all, this isn't like a solid thing that, you know, how do you...
It's hard to dip.
Right.
Okay, so but usually even with the bag, there are some pieces, like some bigger
piece.
So take one piece and dip the one piece and you eat the rest otherwise. Because the truth is, the law is you don't dip the whole moror into the charoses. You dip part of the moror. Even if I have a leaf this big, I don't put the whole leaf in there. I just take the edge. The edge gets, so what's there? So I have a lot of pieces. So one piece gets dipped in and the others don't. That's fine. Okay, now we come to Korech, because Hillel, in the times of the Gemara, he told his opinions, there's a machlokas, an argument, did you eat the matzah and the morah separately or together? So he says he ate it together. So to fulfill his opinion, we go one more time, and we now have the bottom matzah that's left for Korech. And again, it's not going to be enough to go around for everybody. We're going to need extra. This is now totally rabbinic in nature, so we can go with a smaller measurement of 15 grams of matzah, which would be half a machine matzah. Half a machine matzah. And you take the same amount of moror that you did for beforehand, the way we defined it for you, and you make a sandwich. But again, you'll dip the moror into the charoses, same as before, put the moror in the matzah, make a sandwich. No blessing is made because you've already made a motzi, you've already made a borei pri adama, you made alam for the mor. But you say a paragraph, and that's the next page, it's still on page 27 at the bottom. You say, Zeich elamikdash kehillel, this is to remember in the times of the Beis HaMikdash when we had Hillel's opinion to say to eat the matzah and the mor together. There's a lot of symbolism to that. You know, korach together, matzah and mor symbolizes, you know, that there's always good in the bad. Right, you say, you know, mor represents bad. There's people in this world who are always unhappy. You know why? Because when anything happens, they always isolate the bad. So the lesson is, you know what, the truth of the matter is, God is nice to you most of the time, and he's good to you most of the time. And really, on one side of the mor, he's nice, and on the other side of the mor, he's nice. So a person knows how to come up with the sandwich way of life. That stop looking at what's inside the matzah, but look what's on the outside also, and take the whole picture. You're going to see there's a lot more matzah than mor in your life. And you really have a better life than you think. And that's the message of Hillel, where you combine the matzah and the mor together. You're sandwiching in, you know, instead of exposing the mor. And of course, you know, both things happened. When the Jews were in Egypt, all they could see was mor. When they left, and they could understand, you know, there was matzah before Egypt, there was matzah after Egypt, and Egypt was a little mor in the middle. And that's an important way of looking at things, that most of the things that God does for you are really beautiful. Occasionally, he goes, is a problem? Okay, so we stick that in the middle of the sandwich. But it's mostly matzah. Mostly what Hashem does for you is beautiful, wonderful things. Again, the same rules as before. You gotta eat it all within 2 or 4 minutes, and it begins from the time you swallow. Men should recline when eating the korach, because there is matzah there, but if you forgot, you need not eat it again, because it's only rabbinic in nature. So at this point of the game, you've probably spent a good 10 to 15 minutes on these three procedures. And I know that's going to be a little difficult if you have secular guests at the table who are really hungry and they don't want to waste their time eating matzahs and vegetables. But you got to try your best to make it clear. So everybody at this point in the game has had a matzah and a half, of, let's say machine matzah and a half, and quite a few vegetables, right? And you need to spend a lot of time, and it's three different eating sessions where we're focused on this. So again, before every one of these three, a good, you know, a short but brief, meaningful explanation to keep people focused on while they're eating it. And keep telling people, keep focusing on the eating, keep focusing on the chewing and the bitterness, and make it real. We'll talk more about that Tuesday night when we talk about the meaningful Seder. So, and those are three critical, and these are the big mitzvahs to be done. Okay. Now that you've done that, we move on to the next part, which is Shulchan Aruch, the set table, you eat the yontav meal. Okay. At this point in time, remember we said you can't start Kiddush before 8:48. Okay. By the time you're finished with Kiddush, it's close to 9 o'clock. You're gonna give at least an hour to do the Haggadah. At least an hour. You know, to do a half, any kind of a job takes an hour. And many are doing 2 hours. Well, let's say it's an hour. And now, to eat all this matzah more, it's going to take at least 15, 20 minutes. So you're not sitting down to eat till about 10:30. I don't know about you, but I can't eat a big meal at 10:30 at night anymore. And the truth is, there's no need to eat a gigantic meal. But here it's a mitzvah, so you got to eat. Again, if you lived in Eretz Yisrael, you'd be doing this all earlier, because sunset's much earlier.
What do you do when you have a small child?
You put the child to bed, and he doesn't stay for the Seder. He's, you know, a small child.
The Seder is really for children.
It's not for 2-year-olds.
No, we're not talking about
children. If the child's 6, 7, 8, they stay up. We said last week, they have to take a nap in the afternoon. That's all. You say you want to be up for the Seder, take a 3-hour nap in the afternoon. And, you know, my kids, even on a regular Friday, they can step all night. They never step all night. They have no problem. It's exciting for them to stay up after bedtime and all these strange things that are happening. They have a blast, right? So now, what do we eat? Again, you're not to eat a giant meal. There's no mitzvah to have a big meal here. Here, you see, a lot of people are very, when it comes to the Haggadah, they whip through it. Here, everybody becomes a machmer. They're so strict. Oh, you have to have a big meal. You know, you gotta remember, you got, there's a lot more to go after this meal. There's a lot more to go still. So you should eat a very, I would say, what's the word I'm looking for here? A very, portion controlled Shulchan Aruch. Right? So the custom is, first we bring out eggs. We have eggs dipped in salt water. Some people take the egg from the Seder plate. A lot of symbolism to egg. You know, egg is round. It's the cycle of life. Hard-boiled eggs, the longer you boil them, the harder they get. The Jew, the harder it is that the non-Jews oppress us, the harder we get, and we don't give up our Yiddishkeit. It's a lot of beautiful symbolism to the egg. You eat the egg. It's a custom to have fish as well, because when the Jewish women had to draw water for their tired husbands, God miraculously made sure that when they drew the water, the fish came by, they were able to catch fish at the same time. So we have fish to remember that. And there's other beautiful symbolisms to fish. Look up on the website the Friday night meal. We talked about fish and all the symbolism of fish. Beautiful stuff. You can look over there. And that's a traditional food. Really, you can have anything you want, except for one thing you're not allowed to have. And this is the biggest question I get almost every year from the housewives. You're not allowed to have any roasted meat. Roasted meat is defined as poultry or meat that was prepared without any liquid, which can include roasting, barbecuing, and broiling. Now, so what about a pot roast? But you clearly can't make a steak on the grill. For sure not. For sure not allowed to do that. The reason we don't do this is because the Korban Pesach, when we had a Beis HaMikdash, the Paschal offering, was roasted. And we're not allowed to do anything that would look like we're, God forbid, are roasting a sacrifice outside of the temple. So that's why we don't have any roasted foods. So therefore, but what you can't, so now what about a pot roast? So the rule is very simple. If there's no liquid in the pot roast, you can't do that. But if you put some liquid at the bottom of the pan, so it's not roasting technically, then you can serve a pot roast. You can serve a roast, provided you have the floor of the pan has liquid in it. And then there's no problems. But if it's totally you put a chicken in the pot and there's not a drop of liquid in there, then you got a problem. For the Seder nights only. Yeah?
Lemon barbecue chicken, the best chicken in the world. You pour the liquid of the sauce over the chicken, but you roast it.
No, it has to be sitting in liquid.
How much liquid?
It's boiling in the liquid. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to submerge it. But, you know, you put a good amount. You know, that's a lot of liquid over there, you know. And then it's like cooking, so to speak, as opposed to broiling or roasting.
Can
right?
you make a turkey?
And there's some... If you put a lot of liquid in, sure. I don't know. You know, a lot of ladies put like tons of liquid in a turkey and you do it, right? There's a lot of things you can do. I mean, you're not limited to boiled chicken, right? You can even, sometimes people make steaks on a pan on top of the pan, on top of the fire with a lot of liquid. Kitchen cacciatore, face. There's things you can make. And again, this is not the major part of the night. See, everyone makes a mistake. They have to make unbelievable meals and this and that. Frankly, after I've eaten all that matzah and had two glasses of wine, I've had that more, and I know I still got to eat afikoman, which is another whole matzah for dessert. There's not a lot of, and I've had an egg, and I've had some, fish. Right? You have a little chicken soup. Frankly, you know, by that time of the game, I just take a token piece of meat because it's a mitzvah to eat a little meat on Pesach. And that's it. You know, get a piece of salami if you want. Yeah, have cold cuts. Have
here,
cold
have
cuts.
A piece of salami. Thanks for coming.
You know, have cold cuts. I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of things to serve that you don't have to pick something that was broiled. I'm sure the ladies are not short of any recipes of meats that are not prepared with some kind of liquid over there. So for the Seder nights, you're serving that. That's the only restriction. Meatballs is great. Great meatballs and potatoes. Great thing to have. Everybody likes meatballs, right? There's a lot of things. Stir fry. Right? I mean, if there's liquid, a nice amount of liquid in there. You could have, you know, beef and broccoli. You can go Chinese. Right? You can make shepherd's pie. That's a real good one, right? I'm saying there's a lot of great alternatives. And again, there's not a lot of food that's going to be eaten, hopefully, if you've done everything properly. Now, the shank bone from the saber blade is not eaten, obviously, because that's roasted. Again, if you eat too much, you're not going to be able to make it through the rest of the Seder. You eat a lot, overeating at about 11 o'clock causes drowsiness. You're not going to be able to do the whole Seder. What's important, though, is you got it. Now's the time to talk, sing some Zmiros, say Dvar Torahs, shmooze, you know, socialize a little bit. But you got to make sure you've got to eat your Afikoman Komen before halachic midnight, which this year is 1:18 a.m. So you got to make sure that the meal ends with enough time to still eat the Afikoman Komen and finish by 1:18 a.m. And so now we're going to get to that in a minute, right? Now, it's praiseworthy if a man can recline when he eats at the meal, but it's not a requirement. Some men may find it too difficult to eat while they're in a reclining position, but if you can, that's nice. And according to some opinions, it's a mitzvah to drink a little bit more wine because now this is your Yom Tov meal, and your Yom Tov meal should have some wine. Everything you have before and after is not really part of the meal. So a little bit of wine, again, would be a nice thing, but not have to do it, but it's a nice thing to do as well. So you finished your meal, and that's why, you know, I would suggest generally not to have dessert at the Seder, because dessert is coming up, and that's next called Tzafun, eat the Afikoman. Afikoman's an Aramaic word which means dessert. When we had a Beis HaMikdash, what we did was, at our Seders in the Beis HaMikdash, we slaughtered two animals. One was the holiday offering, one was the paschal offering. You slaughtered the holiday offering, and that was dinner. A nice piece of steak, whatever. In the Beis HaMikdash, you could have steak, right, on Seder night. See what we're missing? Can't you wait for Mashiach to come in? Steak and matzah. Ah, gewaltig, right? So you had your steak, and then for dessert, you had a leg of lamb. That was the Korban Pesach. That was Korban Pesach with some matzah. And that was dessert. Right? Chocolate covered cookies. It's not dessert. There's nothing about that. I'm not saying you're forbidden to serve dessert at the Seder, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not saying that. But I mean, you gotta realize, you have to eat the Afikoman with an appetite. If you are literally stuffed and the belt's popping when you finish your meal, and now you gotta shtup in another matzah like that, it's very questionable if you fulfill the mitzvah at all. It has to be eaten still that you're hungry for it. So again, let's be honest, you had two glasses of wine, a matzah and a half, lots of moror, you had an egg, you had some fish, how much more can go in the tank, and you still got to have another matzah and two cups of wine after that?
But it's such a small piece of the Afikoman.
It's not a small piece of the Afikoman. You're going to see in 1 minute how big a piece it is. It's not a small piece. That's another mistake. People eat lots of dessert, you know, lemon meringue pie, chvesvos, cookies, this and that, and now it's time for the Afikoman. I only take a little morsel. You haven't done the mitzvah. When we had a Beis HaMikdash, we had matzah with the Korban Pesach. So we have to remember the fact we had a Korban Pesach and matzah. So what do? We go to our child who has that bigger broken matzah and we start, you know, trying to get the matzah from him. And of course he's going to extract something from us to get that matzah. But you should know, always have up your sleeve, if the child is being too difficult, halacha is, or if you lose the Afikoman, you could take any piece of matzah for the Afikoman. So when they start negotiating with you, and they're getting up to three figure digits, you say, you know, I think you're going too high, and I just say to your wife, can you pass me another box of shmur matzah? I'm going to go with that. So that's the ultimate, union buster. Negotiating breaker, whatever you want to call it. And you go with another matzah. So, hopefully, or if you hit that and you can't find it, use another matzah. So that's not a problem. If possible, you should eat 30 grams of matzah. That's a whole machine matzah. If it's difficult, 15 grams, but it really should be 30 grams of matzah. Okay? Okay, if you've eaten a little bit and you don't feel up to eating so much, okay, but still 15, still a half a matzah. It's not a little piece. No blessings said in the Afikoman, but you have to have in mind that you're doing the mitzvah of eating the Afikoman. Yes. So at the end of the day, you've had 2.5 pieces of matzah.
That's a lot of matzah.
That's a lot of matzah. And that's the mitzvah. That's what I'm trying to... This is what gets you closer to God tonight. It's this matzah and this moror and this karpas and this wine. Oh, and you know, you're a human being too, so you have to, just have to have something tasty. So we give you an egg and a little chicken soup and a little fish. But I mean, quality controlled portions is the key. Not that you're being stingy, God forbid. And if you're the host, you know, you have to be careful. You don't want to stuff your guests so they can't do the mitzvah properly. For those that are there to do the mitzvah properly. If they're not there to do the mitzvah properly, then let them enjoy themselves. But, you know, you realize that there's a lot to eat, and a lot of people just don't, you know, weren't either trained that way, they don't realize. And if one really thinks about the mitzvahs, and if you really focus on the beauty of the night, you don't have to stuff yourself so much with food. You know, the celebration of life itself and freedom itself is such a beautiful thing that if you can be satisfied with the matzah and the moor and those things. So I don't know. I feel sad for so many, wives who spend momish hours and hours cooking the ultimate repast and such an unbelievable meal. And in the eyes of the Torah, yes, a nice meal is important, but really not a big deal here. Not, 17 kugels and this and that. There's no place to put it. You know, it's next day yontif, fine. For lunch, give a good gesunta meal, because people are hungry. But at night, it should be a very small meal. Really, a very small meal. There's no need to cook so much. Even with a lot of guests, it shouldn't be a lot. Okay, I hope I didn't burst too many bubbles here, but that's good to know. And if people ask you that, again, you gotta know your crowd. If you have a totally secular crowd and they're not gonna eat that matzah, it's not gonna happen. So you gotta know your crowd, but for those who wanna follow the halacha, that's what we have to do. Again, you have to recline when eating the afikoman. If you forgot to recline, if it's not too difficult, you should eat another matzah. If you've already washed your hands for my machronim, and you're going to start benching, you don't have to eat any more afikoman. You should try to finish the afikoman by midnight, but if you didn't, you still have to eat the afikoman. So don't think you got out of it. So you still have to eat it. If you're seeing that it's like, what if you see it's like 1 o'clock and you've just started the eggs?
What test say like that?
You know, what do you do? Okay, so you could rely on the opinion that says to eat the afikoman after midnight. Then there's another option that we did in our house a couple times, and I can't get into the details of why this is so. This is a big argument, you know, if you have to eat the afikoman by midnight and then nothing else after midnight, or you have the whole night. Anyway, there's different opinions, and what you can do is if you're running late, you can do like this. You can stop and say, listen, we're eating the afikoman now. According to the opinion, it says you have to have the afikoman by midnight. I'm eating the afikoman now. And then you don't eat anything until after that, till 1:18. Then after 1:18, you can go on with your meal. And then you say, well, according to the other opinion that says, you know, I can eat the whole night, you eat the rest of the meal, and then you eat another afikoman according to that opinion. The first opinion says you have to eat the afikoman at midnight, then says after midnight you can eat whatever you want. So then, in other words, you eat afikoman twice. If you're really running late, if you want to fulfill all opinions, and you have a real good stomach, you can do that. But it's better to, in other words, the point I'm trying to make, after all is said and done, the meal shouldn't take so long. That's the point I'm really trying to make over here. If you have company that's amenable to what you're doing, you'd like to spend about 2 hours on the Haggadah. And really, by 12 o'clock, that's when you're going to start with the motzi and this and that. You're going to start your meal at about 12:20. It doesn't take long to serve an egg, a little fish, a piece of meat, and half an hour of meal's finished. By 1 o'clock, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, 5 after 1, you go with the afik, 10 after 1, you go with the afikoman, takes your 4 minutes after the afikoman, and then you're ready to go. That would be the optimal way to do it, really. That really is the way. I'm sure if you go to Hasidish Tish, that's where you're going to see it. Where rabbis take a long, long time, but when the meal is, you got to do it. You got to do it. How much time do you got to spend eating food? How much you spend at a normal dinner on a Wednesday night? Right, you spend more than 45 minutes with dinner? So, and this already started with matzah and mora and wine and this and that. So that's, I'm not telling you have to do that. Just saying, if you want to get the spiritual experience and do everything the way it should be done, that would be something important. Okay, now, then we after you finish the afikoman, you should not eat anything after the afikoman. The taste of the afikoman should be on your mouth for the rest of the night. Of course, you're going to drink 2 more cups of wine, but that's part of the mitzvahs. Now, if you want to drink a little water because you're thirsty, you've had a lot of matzah, you can drink a little water. After your bench, it's preferable to not have any drinks after that. But if there's great need, you really are thirsty, you could have a little tea, a little seltzer, a little apple juice, lemonade, mildly flavored soda, but nothing strong like coffee. I know that's what you might want to have. Shouldn't have coffee. Shouldn't smoke. Kills the taste of the matzah. According to those opinions, we'll say you can't smoke. Okay, and you should go to bed, the taste of matzah, and obviously not brushing your teeth before you go to bed. Too bad on the dentist tonight. We want the taste of matzah to be in your mouth when you go to bed.
You don't brush your teeth.
Don't brush your teeth. Don't rinse your mouth out before you go to bed. You go to bed with the taste of matzah in your mouth. That's the Seder. You know, once a year, twice a year. It's not going to be, no one's going to get cavities from that. It's never going to happen. Right? Now we're ready for Barech, benching. The third cup of wine is poured before Birchas HaMazon. One should wash Mayim Achronim, the afterwaters. If there's 3 men present, we do Rabbosai Nevarech, we do a Zimun. The head of the household leads, unless he has an important visitor. I got to hurry now, we finish on time now. And if there's someone leading the Zimun, then he holds the cup of wine during benching. If there's no leader, everybody holds a cup during benching. After the benching, we make the bracha bar priya gafan again. We recline on the left side for the men. If you forgot, here you do not have to repeat it. And that takes us to page 33. Benching is over. We pour the fourth cup of wine. It's also customary for the head of the household to pour an extra cup of wine for the kosher Eliyahu, the cup of Eliyahu, because the Seder is now moving from the past into the future. From the past to the future. And Elijah, the prophet, represents Mashiach. We try to get a very beautiful cup, an ornate vessel, to be the cup for Eliyahu. We open the door, we say the prayer Shvoch Chamoscha while we're standing. And there's always some father who convinces the children, you know, and we believe that Eliyahu Navi is there at the Seder in spirit. So when you have little children, you know, the father shakes the table a little bit and the wine spills. Oh, see, Eliyahu was here, right? I won't discuss the educational benefits of that custom. But, and then we're now getting into the hollow. What do you do with the cup of Eliyahu at the end of the night? It's 2 customs. Some say just leave it, cover it. And then tomorrow morning, use it for Kiddush. Because we use a cup that is used for one mitzvah to another mitzvah. If you have a house where you don't know what's going to happen, and kids are going to play, and it's going to get all in place, then just pour it back into your bottle. Okay, moving on. Hallel. Now, at this point, you know, people are tired. And here's when a big mistake happens. Okay, guys, let's put it into 5th gear. Let's knock this hallel off in 10 minutes, guys, because it's getting tired. This way you really should be taking a long time. Singing, this is praise to God. This is Hallel. You should be singing the Hallel straight through. It's like a normal Hallel. You should take a good long while, sing lots of nice Dvar Torahs during the Hallel. And if little children should be encouraged to stay up. Now you shouldn't recline when you're saying the Hallel because it's praise to God. You should be sitting upright with reverence. And just like in Shul, when you're on page 35, we do Hodu Lashem Kitov. The Chazan says it out loud and people repeat after him. That's in the bold. And on page 36 we say, Ana Hashem. So if you have 3 people in your house, and they don't have to be men, it could be a husband and wife and a kid. 3 people, you do the same thing. The leader leads and the people respond and respond after him. And there's different customs. What is part of the hallel? Follow your local Haggadah. And there's different customs when hallel ends, when Nirtza begins. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. But at the end of the Hallel, and in this Haggadah, it's on page 42, you drink the 4th cup of wine, you make the bracha, you recline on the left. If you forget, you don't have to re-drink it. And this one, you should make an effort to drink the entire cup, or at least 3 ounces. Because you have to make an after blessing. You only can make an after blessing if you've had 3 ounces of wine. As you see on page 42 is the after blessing. And you should have in mind, all the other wine you drank the whole night should be discharged with that after blessing. Okay, that's Hallel. And then Nirtzah. Nirtzah is we hope our Seder is accepted. We sing Chasal, Seder Pesach. Our Seder has ended. We sing Lashon Hava Yerushalayim. And then there's three or four beautiful, beautiful songs that we sing to end the Seder in our hope that we will be back in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim for the next Seder. Now, at this point in the game, if you're having a nice Seder, it should be about 2:30 or so. Because, you know, you finished off your covenant at 1:18, and you benched, and you sang Hallel, and you said some Dvar Torahs, and you sang Echad Miodeah, 2:30. So now, here's a thing that most people don't know. There's only really one night of the year where you get a mitzvah for staying up the whole night. And people mistakenly think it's Shavuos.
Right.
Shavuos is a custom. It's a custom. It's no mitzvah. It says nowhere in the Torah to stay up Shavuos night. But it's a nice custom. You should do it. If you can, it's a nice custom. But there's a specific mitzvah of the Torah. It says you should tell it to your children. You should talk about the Exodus. You should talk about it the night of Pesach. And the more you talk, every word you say is a mitzvah. And that's why we start that gada with the five rabbis in B'nai Brak that were saying it the whole night till the student says, Rabbeinu, it's time to say Kriya Shema Shel Shachar, so you have to say the morning Kriya Shema. And if one is strong enough, one should stay up the entire night of Pesach singing songs of praises to God, talking about the Exodus. Many have a custom to sing Shir Ashirim, which is the ultimate love song between the Jewish people and Hashem. It's a mitzvah to stay up as long as possible, and if you could, to then to daven shachris, to daven sunrise, which is very early this year. Oh no, it's going to go back an hour. It'll still be early. I don't know, about 5 o'clock, 5:30. And to daven, go right into shachris. That'd be the ultimate. If you could do that, that would be an unbelievable mitzvah. It's almost my dream to be able to do that and have a minion once, to do that. But that really should be done. If Nebuch were human beings and 2:30 were tuckered out, okay? So, you know, certain people, what they would do is they'd stay at the Seder table and they would talk and sing and then just fall asleep at the table. Fall asleep at the table and you get up when you get up. You know? But if that's not good for your back or things like that, okay? You say, okay, I'm a human being. 2:30, I did my mitzvah, I was very happy with you. So I'm gonna go to sleep. And when we go to sleep, usually we say a long bedtime Kriya Shema. But tonight all you have to say is the first paragraph of the Shema and the blessing of Hamapil, because this is called the Leil Shumarim, the night where God watches us. And if you don't live in Harlem, right, or at Jane and Kiel, you don't lock the front door. Wow. Leave the door unlocked. It's the night that Hashem watches us. Yeah, and you should teach it to your children. You should say, children, we're not locking it. No, for sure not putting the alarm right now. I'll put an alarm on Yom Tov anyway. But you don't lock the door. You don't have to leave the door open, but you don't lock the door. Tonight, Hashem is going to protect us. It's a night of protection. I don't have to say a full Kriya Shema. It's a night that Hashem protects us. And you go to sleep knowing you did a beautiful Seder with Hashem. Now, just one small point. The second Seder, the next night, if you don't live in Eretz Yisrael, it's identical with just a couple minor changes that you should be aware of that are helpful. Number one, you cannot start your Seder preparations until nightfall, which does not begin. Nightfall is 8:49. So it's not likely you're going to start a Seder at 8:49, the second Seder. Because you're going to have to at least set a table, prepare some stuff. Well, at least take a half an hour. If you have any kind of guests. Unless it's just two people. It takes time. You can't make those preparations before because you're not allowed to prepare from one day of Yom Tov to the next day of Yom Tov. So, you know, now if you have the Seder at your house one night and somebody else's house the other night, maybe they'll have everything set up before Pesach, then it's not, but even that, still you gotta pour the wine, you gotta take the matzah out. So you're gonna realize second Seder will not start as promptly as the first Seder. It just can't. So factor that into your calculations when you're inviting guests to realize that most Seders on the second night won't start before 9:30. Depending on how quickly you are in setting things up. And since the second night is rabbinic by nature, we're lenient in certain areas. For example, instead of 30 grams of matzah, when we set to 30, we can cut it to 15 on the second night. And frankly, by the second night, you probably had enough matzahs already. The leader should try to eat 30 grams. Sick and elderly can be much more lenient on the second night and take 10 grams of matzah, right? Some have the custom that they don't have to be so careful about eating the afikoman before midnight, because it's all rabbinic. And after the afikoman, where we said you shouldn't really have too many types of drinks, on the second night you could have almost any kind of drink as long as it's not an intoxicating drink. You know? And also the second night, I said you can go to bed right after the Seder, you don't have to stay up. So there's some, because it is rabbinic by nature. So it is a little bit different the second night, but basically pretty much the same. Okay, any questions, comments?
In Israel, do they have two Seder?
In Israel, only one Seder. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Now, if you're a Canadian and you live in Canada and you're visiting Israel, you have to have two Seders.
Huh.
You have to.
Go find one.
What?
Go try to find
one. Oh, you go to any hotel. Okay. Every hotel. Woo! You have no problem finding one in Eretz Yisrael. Go down Hotel Row in Yerushalayim or anywhere. There'd be no problem having two Seders over there.